Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, It's Not My Fault. The questions this cast answers are, what do I say when directs tell me it's not their fault? Should I figure out whose fault things are? And how important is fault to a manager? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Hey there, it's Sarah from Manager Tools, and I want to give you the opportunity to come hang out with me, virtually that is, on August the 31st. I'll be hosting a virtual effective communicator conference, and for that 4.5 hours, you and I can learn how to help you communicate better with everyone around you, whether it's your coworkers or individual in your personal life that you're struggling to understand how they think. I know how to help you have better relationships. So visit us online at manager-tools.com/training to sign up today. All right, Kate, this is a fun one. This one had me...
It's interesting.
As I was reading, had me thinking a lot of conversations I've actually had relatively recently. That is, if you're a manager and you are implementing the Manager Tools Trinity, what that means is you've rolled out one-on-ones and you're through rolling out feedback, positive that is, and things are going well, right? Things are going great. You're building relationships. You're giving positive feedback. Everybody's happy. And now it's time to add some negative feedback along with the positive feedback. And No surprise, in one of your very first efforts, a minor incident, one of your direct utters some classic pushback. It's not my fault. So today we're here to talk about what you do.
And the first thing is, don't get into a discussion of whose fault it is. Determining fault is not the purpose of giving feedback, and there's a better way. So we're going to talk about how to respond to fault pushback, that the purpose of feedback is future behavior, the shot across the bow, directs own their own inputs, and fault versus and root cause analysis. So fault and root cause analysis kind of as a topic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the first bit, how to respond to fault pushback. So I think in order for us to go through this, let's start by giving a little bit of an example, I guess is the right way of saying it. We're going to explain an example so that we can then leverage that example as we talk through the concept itself. So classic example, you've got a direct and you try and give them feedback and get the not my fault response. Let's say this direct owed you a status report by noon yesterday. That is Tuesday. On the project they're leading. Today is Wednesday. Now, you need your report today to include in a status briefing, which you must give to your boss and one of your peers. Your boss's peer is running a larger initiative, which your project supports. Now, let me be a little bit clear here, folks. None of that is really relevant. Some of it's relevant. But a lot of it's not relevant. But in terms of providing these examples, we find painting you more of a picture, right? Giving you a little bit more specificity in these examples kind of helps your brains think them through.
It also kind of helps with the whole, oh, well, what about this other hypothetical situation kind of thing? Like, we find if we point people's minds in a specific area with a little bit of backstory, you're not trying to apply it to every single situation in which it might occur.
Exactly. All right, so now let's say there are 60 deliverables in the project, not all of which are the project lead's responsibility to complete directly. Right? The project lead's not completing all of the work. Others on your team and perhaps elsewhere in the broader organization have deliverables in the project plan as well. We'll say, for now, everyone on the project team, whether they report to you or not, has already agreed to their deliverables in earlier meetings. And again, there's a little bit more painting the picture information, not necessarily overly relevant, but it helps for explanation.
If you're not familiar with the terminology here, a deliverable is a task that includes, with the underlying work, as well, the responsibility to report on the status of that work. If you are supposed to get a quote from a vendor for a part, that's a task, and that's the underlying work. A deliverable built on that task says that you not only have to get the quote, You have to report the receipt of the quote in order for that task deliverable to be considered done. We'll also use the standard project terminology here, where a task or deliverable that is green is done before or by its deadline, and a task that is about to be due but not yet is late would be called yellow or amber, and a task or deliverable that isn't done by its deadline is red. So there's that. And if we use the quote mentioned above as a deliverable here, then the actual deliverable would be post the vendor quote for part alpha in the supporting documents folder on the project status spreadsheet by noon, Tuesday, the 25th. And as we've said, it's Wednesday, the 16th, and the quote document isn't posted yet. The deliverable has not been met, and the completion is red.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And again, this is a lot of detail. We're just painting a picture here for you, but it's still just a typical deliverable in a simple project. The details are for specificity and they add color, but none of them really impact the delivery of feedback or of our guidance. This guidance works for any feedback where there is a not my fault pushback, don't you think? Mm-hmm. This is specific to projects or people being behind or not giving you the information you need so that you can brief it in a meeting. It's not specific to this exact example.
Mm-hmm. So it's 10 a.m. on Wednesday, let's say. We can pick any time of day. We're going to go with 10 a.m. You review the report, see the red status on the part alpha quote. You see your direct, Francis, let's say, in the hallway, and you decide to give him some quick negative feedback. He knows the model, you've given him plenty of positive and some negative over the past few weeks, and they've gone fine. So this he has exposure to this. It's not a huge shock to him. Therefore, mm-hmm. you say, hey, Francis, do you have a second for some feedback? Sure, he says. So you move forward. And if he had said, hey, I'm late for a meeting, then you would say, no problem, try to catch him later. You also know that you probably won't have to catch him because curiosity will likely get the better of uh-huh. him and cause him to poke his head back into your office later to ask what the feedback
was. Feedback?
Can you help me? I was wondering what you're going to say. Because he said, sure, you proceed and say politely with no frustration or demand in your voice, when you miss the deadline for the quote for part alpha, I can't get ready for my status briefing later today. Can you get me an update within a couple of hours?
Mm-hmm.
And Francis says, that's not my fault. I thought I told the purchasing guys to get it because they don't like us talking to vendors directly. They should have done it, but they didn't, and I can't go around them. To which you say...
This is where we start talking about the fact that feedback is future focused. So he said, the other people should have done it, points at his finger, and you say, okay, well, I'm not really worried about fault, dude. Can you get me an update? And Francis then replies, I'll try. Right? And for now, you might say, good enough for now. Thanks. At this point, the scenario could take a number of turns. Francis might come through, right? He might come back to you and he's got an update. Maybe purchasing had it all along. And now that he actually checks, they send it over. Or maybe he doesn't do anything and you're left with a hole in your report, which you certainly don't take over his deliverable just to fill out your report for all kinds of reasons, not the least of which is reports aren't always imperfect. So having a perfect report to go into a meeting is something that is unnecessary because it's so rare as to be unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
So the crux of the guidance here is that when your direct says it's not their fault, you don't engage on whose fault it is. You only focus on what you want in the future, which in this case is the quote, and better deliverable management and project reporting generally.
Okay, that's what you do and how you do it in detail. Yay, so helpful. We really want to give you guys behavioral guidance. And in this case, we really like to give it up front. So there's that. We also, though, want to share the organizational and feedback theory behind it and why it works. So you know what to do. Don't engage. Focus on the future. Focus on what you want them to do next. We're not engaged in a discussion about whose fault it is, because the purpose of feedback is future behavior. And the primary reason managers, when giving feedback, do not try to determine fault is because fault is about what has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Effective managers know that what has already happened cannot and will never be changed. We cannot change the past once it's happened, right? Surely we can all agree on that.
There are a lot of smart people that listen to this podcast, Kate. Okay, let me say that different, folks. If you have a DeLorean and you can travel time, please let us know. Send us an email.
For the rest of you, we agree. We can't do it.
Mm-mm.
Even if you believed in punishment, and we don't, for the record, punishment is designed to change future behavior, really. So we're going to focus on the future and creating a positive future and doing that in a positive way, which does not, we believe, include punishment. So when we talk about this, it intersects.
Right. We call it negative feedback because when we talk about fault and feedback, of course they intersect at negative feedback. If we were talking positive, for example, praise or positive feedback intersect there. But regardless of whether the feedback is positive or negative, the purpose of feedback is to encourage effective behavior in the future. So if a direct made a mistake, we want to change that behavior to a success in the future. If the direct did something well, we want the behavior to continue so that we have more successes in the future. Feedback is always about the future. It's not about rewards. It's not about punishments. It's not about making people feel good or making people feel bad. It's about increasing the likelihood that we'll get more good going forward, regardless of what the past behavior was.
Yeah. That's why there always should be only one feedback model.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody says, oh, you know, positive behavior, negative behavior, these two things require different conversations, that's wrong. The purview of managers can only be present and future behavior. And what we must want is more positive. And
yeah.
You can hear that as effective behavior in the future. If you really consider it, this is why our tone when we deliver all feedback, positive and negative, is positive, encouraging. Because that's what we're trying to do. Encourage a positive future. And with a mistake, it's to ask for better. With success, it's to ask for more of the same. So when a direct responds to feedback with discussion about who's at fault, or even just talks about who's at fault, they're really talking about the past. And that's not the conversation we're having with them. The purpose of the feedback conversation is the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we avoid the discussion of fault, because it doesn't serve our purposes. Y'all, if we haven't made it clear by now, this might help. Even if a direct admits the fault is theirs, that is not the purpose of the conversation, and we should say so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So going back to our example, the example we queued up, the one with Francis. Suppose Francis, our direct, didn't blame someone else. Suppose he said, "It's my fault, boss. I should have done more. I'm sorry." Now, you might think to yourself, okay, cool. But also, no group, not cool. The reply to that is...
It's still cool. It
still doesn't achieve our purposes in
right.
that...
We still try to fix what
right.
we're getting to.
Because it's not about fault. It's not about if it's Francis's fault or the other people's fault in purchasing or whomever it was with the report. What you'd say if your direct Francis admitted fault is, thank you, Francis, and that's not the point I'm trying to make. I don't really care about fault. I just care about us getting it right next time. It's all about next time. Regardless of whether your direct accepts fault for or gives fault to someone else, make sure you go back to that behavior. Make sure you clarify that the point of the conversation is future behavior. It's not fault.
There's another piece here, which we talked about. The podcast for this is The Shot Across the Bow.
Oh, that's a good one.
We love this podcast. It's one of our favorites, certainly. It's also one of the community's favorites. Mm-hmm. I mean, the title is also fun. You can go listen to it or read it if you're a licensee to understand the genesis of the title, which we think is cool. And simple overview, if a direct pushes back on some negative feedback, just walk away.
Yeah.
And okay, we don't necessarily mean literally.
Turn around and walk away. Don't say any words. Silence.
You can. Yeah. You'd have to say something. You could say, okay, cool, dude.
No worries.
You can actually walk away. What we mean is politely end the conversation as quickly as you can. Don't engage. Don't, you know, involve yourself in a back and forth or further that discussion. Mm-hmm. The reason, again, is that pushback, as well as fault, is about the past. And we're really trying to make it clear that the past is not relevant. We're hoping to affect the future. And if somebody says to you, well, you know, here's the backstory, which is something we get a lot, or you don't understand, your response to that can be interesting and change the subject. Your response to that could be, okay, we could talk about that another time if we need to, and walk away. You don't have to engage, and we would recommend that you don't.
Yeah.
And always remember, y'all, that there's an opportunity if you're having one-on-ones, which hopefully you're not giving feedback without having one-on-ones, that you could defer conversations if there's some conversation they're trying to have with you. We're not suggesting that all of the comments your directs make in response to feedback are things you should ignore or not converse about. It's simply that we want to focus on the future, and not all those conversations need to happen at the same time as feedback. Mm-hmm. So if there does need to be, and we'll talk a little bit about fault tree analysis, root cause analysis types of discussions, that can happen a bit later separately. And I find that really helpful because sometimes the reason you get a response that's about fault or, you know, the genesis of the issue, it's really a form of defensiveness, and it's an emotional response affecting their words.
It's almost like a reflex, Kate.
Yeah.
Like it just falls out.
Totally. And it's logical. We get it. It's human. If I find often, if you defer those conversations, that emotional response tends to level out and maybe it doesn't go away. It does, though, tend to fade a little bit, and there's more thoughtful, there's time to think. And so you end up, I think, because it's based on my experience, you end up with less defensiveness, and you can have a conversation that can actually support change in the future, if that's the type of conversation we're trying to have, because that is what we want, and we want to help them get there. So don't like take the bait on discovering whose fault it was or learning whose fault it was. Trust us, you don't really care about fault. You care about effective behavior, and it needs to be about future effective behavior.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Learning Together sends a very powerful message to your organization. The message it sends: your company values its professionals enough to invest in them, not only to fund the training, but to put aside normal work for a day so everyone together can learn a set of new skills. It's a commitment to the people in your organization, not only to their future, but the future of your organization. If you're interested in bringing manager tools on site to help train a group of your folks and send to them the message that you're willing to invest in your organization, send us an email. You can send it to maggie@manager-tools.com.
So the next thing we're going to talk about, again, another piece of, let's say, tangentially referenced material here, not really, but another bit of managerial guidance that MT has put out in past, is the idea that any deliverable owner also, by definition, owns the inputs of that deliverable, which means typically the "it's not my fault" defense, which is based on someone else not doing something that supported what your direct was supposed to do, is in a way a defense that's a bit nonsensical. That is, the requirement of another person to do something doesn't matter if it's your direct. Your direct is the one who is responsible for gathering those inputs. They own them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the third party has an input, sure, but if they're responsible for the outcome, then they're responsible for the inputs
right.
to that outcome.
Exactly. And it's an important concept. So it's worth repeating, at least in brief here. But again, keep in mind, we do have a podcast for owning the inputs, essentially. Mm-hmm. If you're responsible for a deliverable, you're responsible for the inputs necessary for your deliverable. It's called owning the inputs. And this is a fundamental organizational concept, which, like all other fundamental organizational concepts, no organization ever teaches. So if you're like, how can that be a fundamental organizational concept? I've literally never heard of this before, and I've been in an organization for years. Well, welcome to the rest of us.
Yeah. If organizations hadn't quietly developed this adaptation over the years, work life would be so much more difficult. Without owning the inputs, every project manager would have to assign incredibly granular tasks to every single person
yeah.
who might not have to take even the smallest of actions to support any, who might have to take any tiny, minuscule action to support the project. Anybody, like somebody who has to like make a phone call, that would have to be a task if the people responsible for the end goal weren't responsible for the inputs. It's just not feasible to do that, right? Imagine the consternation of hundreds of people being tasked by a single manager for a particular effort, and none of those people report to the manager. It just
right.
doesn't work.
Well, and I almost think to myself, Kate, why would we ever hold a project manager accountable for a failed project? Project managers, to be clear, just manage the project. They just manage the inputs. Right. They're not doing the actual work. So does that mean that every project manager ever is not responsible for all their failed projects? And immediately you're right. like, of course not. Of course project managers are responsible for their failed projects. Yeah. They own the inputs.
Yeah. That's a great example of owning the inputs, being that you're going to have to work with others and at times get things from them and be responsible for communicating with them and persuading them to help, even though you might not have any role power, depending mm-hmm. on how project management at your organization works. Essentially, what we're saying is, if the project manager is responsible for the end result of the project, then guess what? They own all those inputs.
Yeah.
And there's a corollary to that associated with the work involved in all of the steps and tasks in the project.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other examples of this.
Totally. There absolutely is. And there's another way to make clear it's a foundational organizational operational principle. And that's using the middleman test. If you've listened to any podcast I've recorded in the last year, I'm sure you've heard me talk about the middleman test. In virtually every conceivable situation, you're the middleman between your boss and your directs. So apply the test and ask, if your directs push back to you about fault in the context of owning the inputs, would you push back that same way to your manager? That's essentially it, right? My directs are pushing back on me. Ask yourself, okay, if I was the person in the situation, would I push back on my manager? So suppose your boss assigned you a project. Clearly there's lots to do. And your boss knows you're going to call on your team to do it. Do you think you could defend yourself if you fall behind by blaming the people on your own team for not delivering their tasks on the project? Like, do you think your boss would be like, oh yeah, you're right, totally. Your team's to blame. You have no responsibility here, manager.
No way.
Of course not. Of course not. You own the inputs.
Right. And that middleman test teaches us that we should not tolerate from our directs that which we would not want to visit on our boss.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, more help. In the form of things you can say to a not my fault dodge from the original guidance.
Mm-hmm.
When you're responsible for something, by definition, you're responsible for anyone else's work you need to get it done. Kind of just restating the principle.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a basic principle of work.
Mm-hmm. People don't tend to argue with basic principles. Now, note, if you're a licensee, share the show notes and the Owning the Inputs show notes with your directs. To be clear, if you're a licensee, your license allows you to share our work with your directs, and it's a huge value to your license. So share those podcasts with them.
Another thing you can say is, when I agree to something, my boss assumes that I will handle any issues that come up.
Exactly. And that statement puts you in the same boat as your direct. Many directs don't see this until we make it clear.
This is what collaboration means.
Mm-hmm. Collaboration, folks, sounds nice in theory, but what it means is that we're all tied to one another, and therefore, none of us are an island.
When Jane blames you, I stay focused on her, and it's only fair I do the same here.
Mm-hmm. And most directs get this one. If they throw someone else under the bus, that puts them at risk too when the tables are turned. Many of your directs want you to defend them. Therefore, you defending their colleagues is actually a positive.
You could also say, this is an important managerial and professional lesson. You've got to be able to persuade others to get work done even when you don't have role power.
Mm-hmm. And you'd use this one for those people interested in professional development and career growth.
Okay. Next section, engineers, get ready.
All right, we've got fault and root cause analysis.
I say engineers, I'm slightly kidding. My background as an engineer, this section resonates with me. And for many technical managers and professionals, this concept is tougher because of the prevalence of a valuable and certainly important tool in scientific and technical roles, which is root cause analysis, RCA. There's another version of this called fault tree analysis. RCA is a powerful tool, well applied in many instances when we're trying to understand what really happened.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a great tool. And because it's such a powerful tool, it causes many technical managers specifically to extend the principle of RCA to all feedback, which is a mistake because we don't have time to get to the root cause of every mistake or error or missed deadline or small deliverable. You don't have time for that. At Manager Tools, we completely understand that doing a root cause analysis, it can be fun. Getting to the bottom of things, oh my gosh, that absolutely helps, right? You feel better. You feel somehow vindicated. Bug hunting, when you find the bug, is rewarding. You've solved the problem. You've found the root cause. It's just not a good use of your time.
Yeah, if we try to apply RCA to managerial responsibilities about all of our deliverables, it becomes very quickly unsustainable. If managers try to do so, they will spend all of their time collaborating with their directs on all of their mistakes. And if you've done an RCA or a fault tree, you know it's hours and hours and hours of work.
Yeah.
And you don't have time for that. And it's not the role of the manager in the vast majority of situations, because it's really not our job to fix our direct's mistakes. It's their job. And RCA-like thinking, when applied to all such deliverable misses, is really just overkill. It's like a really big gun for a when you need a fly swatter kind of situation. So It violates related principles of managerial economics 101.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
a really good podcast.
Problems should be solved at lowest possible level.
Uh-huh.
That's like our theme. Remember when this other podcast?
I know, right?
But y'all, otherwise, problem solving becomes enormously expensive really quickly, as opposed to useful to future processes. Some things just don't require the big guns.
Mm-hmm. They exactly.
Require a little paper towel roll or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like a coiled up newspaper or something. And folks, this is why this problem should be solved at their level of the organization, and also you don't have time concept. That's why the Manager Tools feedback model asks directs to fix their own mistakes in the future. If you're familiar with the model, the last bit of negative feedback is, can you do that differently? Or what can you do differently? Instead of telling them how to do it differently. And root cause analysis is about finding the cause of the problem in the past. But feedback's about the future. Not only do you not have time to do a root cause analysis for every single miss on your team, but you knowing the answers is unnecessary. You spending the time is wasteful. And you getting involved in every mistake that happens at a level below you in the organization means you're, maybe robbing is a strong word, but you're taking away the learning that your directs ought to be having from fixing their own mistakes. So, in summary, when a direct says a failure to deliver wasn't their fault, don't get into a discussion with them about whose fault it was and what happened and how it happened. It's irrelevant, folks. That's past behavior. And the effective manager focuses on encouraging effective future behavior. Your directs own their inputs. And it's so much better to teach that lesson than to try and solve their problems for them. Mm-hmm. All right. Good one. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, Sarah.
That's all for this week, folks. Join us again next week for a new topic.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, everyone.